I never have any intro ideas. Usually we just talk until we say something funny, but that might be a minute. I mean, like, we've been gone for a long time. I don't know if we're even funny anymore, Greg. I don't know if we ever were funny, to be honest with you.
If we don't start the episode until we say something funny, we're just going to start the episode at the outro.
Yeah! So. But you know what we didn't tell you?
Oh, that's all, folks. A 5-minute long podcast, and it's 90% music. So.
Can you imagine releasing our 4th episode of the season in late April and having it be 5 minutes?
That is a very us thing to do, I will say. But I guess, you know, I got you to laugh, and you got yourself to laugh, so I think...
That happens a lot.
I think we're good to go. I think we're ready to get up back on the pod. Welcome back, everyone, to...
Hey, audience.
Movies for a Win. Hey folks, how are you doing? Sorry about the delay. Baby responsibilities continue, as does the flu. So it was my turn to get sick for like 9 days or whatever.
Dude, I texted you like fully expecting that you'd been well for a while, and I just hadn't texted you yet. And you were like, I am still, like, gonna die. And I was like, oh, no, it's been so long now.
Denny, I haven't left the bed. Yeah. It was a rough one. But and then, like, at the end of it, I got better. And it was like, all right, time for allergies. Spring is here. Like, all right, I guess I can't tell if this is allergies or flu, but at least I can walk around.
There have been times in my life when I would have rather had the flu than the allergies I get in Texas. I would have rather had the flu than lots of things I get in Texas, to be honest with you.
Hey, listen. Not to get political, but having just had them back to back, I think I pick allergies for this. Allergies wins out this round. All right, I do want to start off with a little bit of a sort of a celebration, because I think if we do the math right, this should be our 150th episode.
It's our Mewtwo episode?
It's our Mewtwo. Well, it's our Mew episode, right?
Mew's 151, I believe.
Hold on, I got the chart back.
Oh yeah, consult the literature.
Hold on, I've got a poster that'll tell us.
Greg is going to his closet at this moment to consult an official poster of all 151 Pokemon. He's coming back with a report. Greg, what are your findings?
Who'd have thunk it? Mewtwo is 150 and Mew is 151. I'm sure this confused me as a child too, but it's numbered 151. But due to the unfortunate deletion and disappearance into the ether of the Dreams episode, this is actually episode number 150. So look at us.
Wow.
150 episodes.
Well, I mean, there's also like three other lost episodes, so we're at like 150 something now.
Yeah, then we got like 130A, where we had to talk about Alamo Draft House. I'm sure we have like 160 floating around somewhere.
Yeah, the clusterfucks speed us up a few episodes, and it all balances out, and we're going to call this our Mewtwo anniversary.
Yeah, this is our Mewtwo episode. The clusterfucks count double, I will say. All right, well, we're going to be talking about, well, I was going to say, this many episodes in, we're still talking about monkeys. We can't stop, and frankly, we don't want to stop, so.
No way.
The conversation continues. We're going to be discussing Planet of the Apes on this week's episode. What a blast, what a treat. I'm really excited to talk about this one, not gonna lie. But I'll start things off though real quick with some of the other stuff I've been watching. I'll save some of it for next week because it's a lot of stuff. Here's how long it's been, Denny. The first thing I want to talk about is I watched the Oscars, or at least the last little bit of it.
Wow. Oh, man, I'm in a different universe. Weird. I've lived a lot of life since then, brother.
Yeah, no kidding. I was out doing a hockey game, and when I got back home, Adrian Brody had just won for Best Actor, and then, you know, by the time I took a shower, made a drink, got cozy in bed, took a two-hour nap, woke up the next day, Adrian Brody had finished his acceptance speech, so... but yeah, I watched Anora win all the rest of the Oscars, I think, that I saw. So that was really cool. Do you have any reactions? I was really thrilled with Anora winning and Flo winning Best Animated.
That was pretty sweet. You love to see someone beat Pixar. That's very rare. And Flo definitely deserved that. You know, honestly, I just wasn't very interested in this year's Oscars at all because, like, 95% of the movies that I thought were noteworthy or praiseworthy of the year were, like, nowhere near the ballot. So this was a year where I was just like, I can't have much of an opinion about what wins because, like,
yeah,
it just doesn't, it's one of those years where I'm like, this is just not reflective of the year in cinema. I was happy to see Anora win. Like, Anora won lots of stuff, and
yeah,
that's definitely in my, like, top five movies of 24, but I don't think I would have said throw every award at it either, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's a great movie. I love it, but, like, I just don't feel like it's a year that... We talk about this all the time, where it's like, the Oscars are really cool when they get it right. And this was a year to me where they were just very off base.
They got it as right as they could, but there was, like, an Emilia Perez stink over the whole occasion.
Yeah.
But it only won, like, two things, I think, so whatever. I'm much higher on Anora than you, and even I'm like, Best Picture's a little... I'm happy for it, but, like, I think it won, like, editing and lead actress are the two things that I'm like, fuck yeah, that's what it deserved the most, I think. And it got those, so that's great.
I'd say if you ever want proof that they just, like, will not validate horror as a genre, Nosferatu, guys. Nosferatu.
Yeah,
that was the best picture of the year. That was the best one. There's no doubt in my mind. Not even nominated for Best Picture. Go fuck yourself. I mean it. Like, go fuck yourself. Not even nominated for Best Picture of the year.
I'm just glad it got nominated for cinematography and I think one other thing. I can't remember. But, like, The Northman got nominated for nothing. And I'm just like, this guy is, like technical, just... filmmaking, like, watching his movies makes you appreciate filmmaking again, and the Oscars are just like,
yes.
No thanks. Rather not. More on that next week, I think. Anyways, Denny, the other thing I watched, speaking of horror, I watched a thriller that came at the recommendation of Dylan Derryberry. This was on my radar a little bit, but he posted something about it showing up on Paramount Plus and how it's cool to go in blind and watch it. And I watched Strange Darling and thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, go in blind. It's on Paramount Plus, like I said. I thought it was just fine. I think you're going to like it a lot more than I did.
Okay, and I'll put it on the watch list.
It's a good thriller movie that has a lot of Tarantino influence, I'll say.
You are speaking my language.
Just don't read anything about it. Just watch it. It's like 90 minutes, maybe a little bit more. It's not very long either, so it's a good time.
Cool.
Another movie I watched, it's on Max BOH. I watched Janet Planet from this past year.
Ooh, yeah, that's on my watch list too.
Oh, okay. I thought I was going to have to tell you about it, but no, it was good. It was, like, a lot of the scenes felt really dreamlike. It's a really contemplative movie. I think it's very interesting, and I love the tone and the atmosphere of it. And I really like when movies portray the younger kids, like 11, 12 years old, as, like, kids that would actually act that way. I thought it was a very interesting movie. Loved the performance from the kiddo. It was great. And I don't know if you're going to recognize him, because I sure didn't. The original Casey Jones from
what?
The original... has, like,
AKA
a really...
the most average-looking dude ever.
Yeah.
He takes the mask off in Ninja Turtles, and I'm just like, oh.
As just a guy, huh?
Yeah. I have a toy of this man, and I'm talking shit. I want another one.
Let's... Shh. let's just put that mask back on. No, he's like, I was like, I feel like I've seen this guy before, but like, yeah, it's, I was like, that's not what, I don't think of him as that, but he was in the movie. He was good.
It's pretty cool.
And Will Patton as well. The other thing I watched, The Bad Guys from a couple years ago. I don't know if you saw that one.
I did not, no.
It's fine. It's, you know, a bunch of animals that do heists. It's kind of like a... It's the perfect movie for if you're between the ages... Movies for when you're between the ages of 11 and 14. This one's winning that category, you see?
Nice.
I think if I was that age, I would have absolutely loved it. But I'm not, so I just kind of found it as like an inoffensive movie with the pretty cool animation style. Nice to look at, you know, just watch it with a kid. Had a decent time. Speaking of the Oscars, go back to that. I watched Nickel Boys, which was nominated for some stuff. It was really, really good. I liked it a lot. This is a director committing fully, 100% to a unique and interesting idea, and I think he stuck the landing. Absolutely nailed it.
Hell yeah.
Do you know anything about Nickel Boys? Have you seen like a trailer for it? It's shot... Probably like 80% of it is shot, it's like a POV style, so like the actors are wearing cameras like on their chest, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's told mostly through the perspective of two guys, but it'll stay with one guy, and people are like looking into the camera, like talking to it as if that's the character. And it works insanely well. It's like...
Cool.
It's this weird thing of, like, if the camera is just strapped to the guy, it should be moving and bouncing a lot more. But it's, like, really steady, really still, and, like, it'll move, but, like, frame up something, like, intentionally, like... Oh, I don't know how to explain it. It's really interesting. Really interesting techniques, and then, like, other parts of the movie are, like, the camera's, like, right behind the guy. It's kind of, like, locked on. And again, if it's just strapped to the guy, there's, like... I don't know how they did it. There's just some shots in this movie that I can't figure out how they did it, and I loved not knowing how they did it, basically. Super interesting. Like, if this guy's wearing it, how is this in the background framed up so perfectly? And, like, this is, like, a 6-minute shot. If the guy, like, leans forward too much, that thing in the background that's important is fucked up. So... I don't know. It's just really cool. Also a really, really engaging story too. So it's not just like, wow, technical stuff. It's a good watch. Do recommend. Two more things here. One more movie. I watched Another Round from a few years ago. It's a movie from Denmark.
Oh,
do you know
cool.
who, do you know Mads Mikkelsen, that actor? He was the bad guy.
Yeah.
Bad guy in Casino Royale. He played Hannibal in the TV show Hannibal. It was a really charming and pretty funny movie. It's four friends that are all like teachers at a high school. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of bummed out with life in general, and they find like a study from like some like philosopher or something. They just like dig up some old theory that of like people could be the most successful if they keep their alcohol volume in their body at a certain level constantly throughout the day. So they like form a pact and just like start the day, and they all like take breathalyzers to make sure that they're like keeping the alcohol content in their life like all day at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of starts working out great for them, actually. The problem is they keep saying, what if we increase the number? And that's when it gets a little bit iffy.
As we do with alcohol, yes. I remember working at rehab.
It's a really, really good movie. It's really funny to me, though, that, like, Mads Mikkelsen is probably the most striking-looking individual, like, working today. And they keep trying to, like, cast him in roles where he's just, like, a guy. And you're like, I don't buy this. This guy.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy looking like that is a little bit hard to hard to buy into completely. All right, the last thing I watched a TV show, Denny. I'm curious if you would be interested in watching it. There's a lot of TV shows on HBO Max right now, and one of them was a Max original. It was The Pitt. Have you seen that show up on your feed on HBO Max?
It's definitely ringing a bell, but I can't say much about it.
Okay, it's a medical drama. Hold on. about like an emergency wing in the Pittsburgh, one of the Pittsburgh hospitals or whatever. And it's just like,
Yes. Okay, I've seen a
yeah.
trailer. Yeah.
It's really cool. Every episode is like, it starts at a start of the day shift, and every episode is 1 hour of that shift. So it's all just like a sequential hour of the shift as it goes along. It's the kind of show where we like let it build up. Like 10 episodes came out, and then we started. We're like, we'll watch one a night when we go to bed, and then that turned into we're watching three a night, and
All right, yeah.
we're itching for more. It's one of the best shows on TV. It just wrapped up, so it's a super bingeable show. It's very, very engaging. I think it has some of the best, like, I guess narrative pacing, I want to say. There's just such a easy to follow kind of flow to it, where you're just, despite how much is going on, you never feel lost by any of it. There's so many characters and like patients coming in and coming out. Maybe they're here for 10 minutes, maybe they're here for like three episodes, but you always know what's going on with them. You always feel like you know what everybody's doing. It's a really interestingly written show. There's only like one or two characters I wasn't really a fan of, but yeah, probably like a 9 out of 10 kind of show for me. I thought it was really good.
Damn,
Worth a
9 out of 10. All right.
watch. Super. Just watch three episodes a day and you're having a good week, is what I'd say.
Hell yeah.
All right, that's it for me. I'm wrapped up there, Denny.
Cool.
Sorry to hog all the air. I think
Oh, dude.
I want to hear about what you've been watching. What are the things you saw?
Man, I have seen so many things. I will start us off, though, with a TV show as well that's really been capturing my imagination. Vanessa and I are current on Yellow Jackets. It is
I thought
so
so.
fucking awesome! Have you watched it?
I have not. Speaking of Paramount Plus, yeah, no, I haven't watched it.
Dude, it is like, oh my God. I love everything about this show. It's definitely a 9 out of 10 for me as well. There is some sloppy writing here and there that I don't love. But man, we've like loved it so much that we're actually going back and rewatching it. And
That's good to hear.
man,
Yeah.
it's the kind of thing that like it gets better on rewatches. There's basically the premise of the show, for those who don't know, is that in the 90s, a girls' soccer team that is going to nationals experiences a plane crash and gets stranded in the wilderness. We have one
Regionals.
timeline that is their age, and then we have one timeline that is present day, and we're missing the middle. And the middle is where a bunch of fucked up, crazy, insane shit happened, and so, like, we follow the one timeline of learning that it's happening, and we follow the other timeline where the secrets are coming out in modern day. And it just gets cooler and cooler. There is a just stupid, phenomenal cast. Christina Ricci as Misty Quigley is just a fucking,
Yeah, nice.
she's on another level, dude. I would tell you some other castings that would definitely excite you, but I wouldn't want to spoil any surprises. But there's definitely, there's a couple familiar faces that specifically you're definitely going to pop for. And
Being worried about spoiling the show by not telling me casting is like the kind of shit that gets me excited. So
yeah.
I
No,
like to hear that.
you should be. It's really good. And there's this whole, you know what? We'll talk when you've seen more. I'll just
Okay.
keep posting on Yellow Jackets online communities and making
Yeah.
Misty Quigley and 64 creator wrestlers. Very proud of my work on that, by the way.
I did figure that's what that was in reference to. And I won't be seeking those out until I've seen more, but might be a while, because The Last of Us also just started up. And
Ah, yeah, we got to get on
yeah.
that too. You're right.
Good first episode. Keep
Yes.
not Googling stuff, just, you know. Good
Sure.
show, good show, great show.
Sure.
Can't wait to talk about it.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the 2025 movies I saw, as well as air some
Sure.
grievances with them. I saw Death
Hit
of a
me.
Unicorn, A24's Death of a Unicorn, starring Paul Rudd, Jenna Ortega. It's all right. It's actually like a
Okay.
little less than all right. It's actually like a little boring.
I've heard similar, and it's kind of in the mid area?
I'd put it lower than mid.
Ooh.
It thinks it's being, like, super badass and dark, but it really doesn't have the balls that it thinks it does.
Oh, that hurts.
It's also one of those movies where you learn everything you need to know in the first 20 minutes, and then you just see exactly what you thought would probably play out after those variables were introduced. Yeah, I was pretty disappointed. Definitely one of my lowest tier A24 movies I've ever seen. I thought the trailer looked fucking dope, so just a general letdown. It was so rough I had to go home and watch Midsommar the next day.
Very nice.
To get my A24 back.
There you go. Yeah, I was going to say, this is why trailers are not good.
Yeah. In general. I watched The Parenting, which I believe is,
that's on Max.
I believe it is, yeah. Still okay. A little better than Death of a Unicorn.
Getting better.
It's basically The Exorcist played as a comedy. Specifically parodying a lot of Exorcist bits, even. It doesn't quite have the balls it thinks it has. This is something I'm not going to blame either The Parenting or The Death of a Unicorn for, because it's happening fucking everywhere, and I'm sick of it, okay? Uh-oh. It is, you take a small cast to a remote mansion, and you do a horror movie there. I'm fucking tired of it, Greg.
I can name a couple examples, and I don't like it either. It's kind of you guys...
I think where it started for everyone was Get Out. That's the fucking modern cabin in the woods.
Be clear, we love that.
No, Get Out was amazing, and they even got away with it twice in Ready or Not. That's another really great horror.
That's a fun one.
But man, it's like, it's not something that's necessarily wrong with any of these individual movies, but it's something that is just happening so often, where you either get summoned to a wealthy person's estate, or you're going to meet your rich girlfriend's parents, and it's just that's your one location for the whole movie. They very clearly Airbnb'd a mansion for you to shoot at. That's just something that needs to stop. It's been enough. it's so old.
It's either an Airbnb or what was it? Recent movie. Who was it? This is just Julia Roberts' like sixth house.
Yeah, seriously.
For that, whatever that End of the World movie was on Netflix.
I just want to grab them and shake them and yell, make a fucking movie. Like, me and my friends went around our parents' big houses with a camcorder at sleepovers. You go to a fucking set, goddammit. Like, you don't get to go to a mansion and run around with a camera, you fucking filmmakers. That's for fucking rich kids at sleepovers. You make a fucking movie. Anyway.
Somebody better paint something.
So,
I want sets.
I'm gonna air a common grievance against Blumhouse and a rare grievance against Alamo Drafthouse.
Ooh. Oh, the grievance of the houses. Please continue.
I'm sorry. Peacock just started spontaneously playing a WrestleMania 9 documentary in my ears.
That's a sign.
I was definitely planning on watching it later. Not in this tab. I have no idea why it did that. a rare grievance against Alamo Drafthouse. It's a real house situation up in here. So I went to what I thought was going to be a really cool movie night at Alamo Drafthouse called The Mystery Machine. It's a Monday night. Just buy a ticket. Mystery movie. Could be anything. Literally anything. No rules, no parameters, no nothing.
Did they tell you like length or genre or like rating or anything? Nothing?
Just show up. I mean, if they did, I didn't read that part. So I might go back and look. I was just like sold on the concept immediately. So.
Come on, Greg. Reading.
What are you? My English teacher. What are you, ChatGPT? Reading something.
Oh, God.
So this is what really upset me. The movie was Blumhouse's Drop, which was upsetting enough on its own.
Okay. I have heard of this movie. I've seen the trailer.
Yeah, it's the movie where she's eating dinner and she gets these drops that say, like, you have to murder your date or I'm going to kill your kid at home. It's even less enthralling than it looks. So here's my beef, though. Here's my beef, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
That movie came out later that week. Okay. So that was a movie we could have just gone to see on purpose in 4 days. But what was even more infuriating was the night before, Alamo Drafthouse had a special drop advance screening just 3 days away for people who would like to see that movie early. And yet they felt that they needed to force a third audience to dedicate a night of the week to this fucking movie. Like, I legit was, like, for real pissed off that this is what they did. Like, I was like, why the fuck would you... There, I could choose to see this early! Like, why are you doing this? So I was... And the movie blows. Like, it is a dog shit tier movie. Like, one of the worst Blumhouses I've ever seen. Which reminds
me...
They made me official.
Oh, no!
I've been holding on because of Invisible Man. I'm done. Blumhouse
and
sucked.
Whiplash.
Blumhouse made fucking Whiplash?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's, where do you think they got all the good credit from?
I'm done. Like, Blumhouse is terrible in the way that, like, Kevin Smith is categorically bad. Blumhouse is now categorically bad. Just like, I never want to fucking see anything Blumhouse related again as long as I live. I fucking hate that film studio.
Fine with me. You're valid. I talk about a captive audience, folks. yeah, I like that. there's people that are dying to see this movie, people that would like to see this movie, and then a third secret category of people that can be forced to watch this movie. We need to hit all three with separate special events.
And bro, I guarantee there was no one in the theater this applied to based on the nature of the event. But can you imagine how mad you'd be if you had tickets to the drop advance screening and the mystery movie and then it twice? You'd be more mad than I was, dude. Like, that is definitely, like, an issue that could have technically happened, although I doubt it did.
I don't doubt it, though. I think it's actually pretty likely that at least one or two people fall into that category. The Venn diagram of people willing to watch any movie and the people that want to get, like, an advance showing of a new movie coming out, I feel like there's overlap there.
Bro, they literally could have put on, like, Wayne's World, and I would have been like, this is awesome. He just, like, had a great night. Like, such an over-the-plate. Like, if you put on something moderately fun, I would have been like, damn, I'm doing this again. But, like, Jesus Christ, man. What is that shit, Alamo?
Yeah, would you have rather watched... a Minecraft movie, or
no? I would, like, shred my season pass if it was, like, fucking.
See ya.
No, like, I'm out. Like, this is clearly something that caters to the weirdos. Like, just play some dirty pervert horror movie from the 80s, like a normal fucking movie theater. Anyway,
that's right.
One more 2025 film I wanted to talk about. Now that I've said some things. The Alamo Drafthouse I needed to say in therapy. I saw Bong Joon-ho's Mickey 17, Greg.
Oh, yeah. How was it? Dude, I want to see it so bad.
It was really, really great. Like, really, really charming. Very fun. Very engaging and interesting. Just, like, it's, like, literally every Bong Joon-ho movie is brilliant, and so I feel like it's cliche to just be like, it's brilliant. It's like, yeah, guess who made it? Of course it's fucking brilliant. Like, that's he can't make a non-brilliant movie. He can't even make a mediocre one, not on his worst day.
The headline here is he's done it again, folks.
Yeah.
And I am a longtime Robert Pattinson apologist. So,
man, he
love him.
He disappears into that role. Like, he actually, the Alamo's pre-show told us that I think he got a voice coach to teach him how to make, like, Ren and Stimpy noises. Like, that was, like, his inspiration was, like, one of those, like, Ren and Stimpy cartoon characters. And it's not annoying. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm saying this and you're like, Jesus, for, like, a whole 2-hour movie. It's not annoying. It's just like, he just comes across as a very meek, a little bit nasally, but kind of cute, you know, little quirky guy. And it's just, it doesn't feel like you're watching Robert Pattinson. Like, I just remember seeing that guy in The Lighthouse and being like, gee, I wonder if he can handle a challenging role like Batman. People are worried.
I had read, and I'm not sure how true it is, I think originally he wanted to do something similar, but the inspiration was Steve-O.
Steve-O fucking rules.
And Bong Joon-ho said, no, buddy.
man, I watched a lot of shit, I'm gonna be honest. I watched some Brian De Palma. I watched this dope Subway movie called The Incident. I gave it 5 stars. That was pretty cool. Ooh. I don't know. I watched some chick flicks. I watched Uncle Buck. I watched the Muppet movie. I watched a lot of Muppet movies, actually. I watched both Mortal Kombat movies. I watched Labyrinth. But you know what? I'm going to end us on a positive note. This is something I hadn't watched since I started logging movies I'd watched in 2017. I've definitely seen it before, but I hadn't watched it since. Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ooh, okay.
It is so fucking good. I gave it 5 stars. Like, seriously. Like, action adventure, that's peak. It's just fucking peak. And, like, the one I've seen the most, well, I'm not considering anything after the third one. That's just, like, a commercial or something about Indiana Jones or shit. But, like, of the first three, the one I've seen the most is the one I enjoy the least, which is The Last Crusade, because that's the one everybody always wants to fucking watch. I just, like, that movie is, like, 70% cringe to me. I don't really like it. Temple of Doom is my surprise smash, and I thought from memory Temple of Doom was my favorite of the three. But nah, dude, it's Raiders. Raiders is just so fucking incredible. We should probably cover it for a variety of themes, so I won't go into like a full review. What am I going to say about Raiders of the Lost Ark you don't already know anyways? I just love movie, man. It's just even better than I remembered.
Yeah, the podcast Blank Check is in the middle of their Spielberg series, and I think they did Raiders in the last couple of weeks here, so might want to check that one out. The thing about these, I listened to their episode on E.T. and thought it was fantastic. I thought that was great. Nice. Even though the only time I watched it was for this podcast. One second, I wanted to check something because these episodes have been pretty long. Before I recommend it, I want to see if I'm recommending a 4-hour episode. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Blank Check episode, 3 hours 33 minutes.
Shit, I thought you were looking at our old episodes where we covered ET, and I was like, yeah, we used to run like 5 hours on a Tuesday. Finished at like 2 a.m.
Watch 3 movies during the week and then record Jesus a 6-hour fucking podcast or whatever.
Greg, I have bipolar disorder. How did you do it, man?
I don't know. I'm the ride or die-est person that you'll ever meet.
clearly.
I'm game for anything. I've got documented proof. Scroll down in the podcast episode listings and you'll see.
You would not believe what I've made Greg watch. He means it when he says he's game for anything.
That's right. Some reason rates it kind of high, just because I'm excited about it.
Yeah. All right.
Are we ready to get into Planet of the Apes here? I think I am. Oh,
I have been ready to get into Planet of the Apes. I love this movie, yes. Greg. I love it.
I love it too. Not to spoil how things the conversation's going to go, but I also love it, folks. Planet of the Apes. We're here. We've arrived on this planet of the apes.
Hey.
It is a movie that came out in 1968, and you can get it on Amazon as a rental, and I think, you know, if you do, like, iTunes or YouTube rentals, I think that might be the only places to watch it. I'll get us going with a Critiker review of the week. Miss doing these. This is a good one. This user gave it an 85 out of 100 and said, introducing this to my son brought back memories of trying to figure out why Roddy McDowall is more attractive in ape form. glad I'm past that part of my life.
I mean, where's the lie?
I mean, spot the lie. Yeah, this is gonna be a good time, man. I really like this movie.
Cheers.
Cheers. I'm gonna do the same, but I won't hear the first part of it, but go ahead and give the people your relationship with the movie.
This is my first time ever seeing Planet of the Apes. The only other Planet of the Apes material I've watched was when we did, I think it was Rise of the Planet of the Apes, very early in this podcast. So this is me going in cold I knew what the fucking finish was. It's Planet of the Apes. But yeah, this is my first time ever seeing it. I had never watched it before, kind of meant to my whole life. Assumed it was kind of just a very slow plodding, just boomer ass sci-fi, Ben-Hur, whatever.
It's,
you know, like I thought
it's
it was just
the era.
Yeah. So I just never really got around to it, and about a year ago, someone I knew was just really into it, watched it for the first time, and their enthusiasm was contagious to me, and it's just been on my watch list ever since, and this theme was the perfect time to finally crack that open.
Nice, Lee said.
What about you?
Well, great. Man, love to hear that. this would have been my second time watching it. I talked to my dad a little bit about this movie. We watched it together when I would have been like maybe 12 or 13. They had it on PBS. Of course.
Right after
we watched this is prime time. Arthur is right after school.
Right.
The movies come on at like 6. without commercials though, folks. PBS.
Damn.
No one's done it better. I would have watched it way back then and watched it again this time. I didn't really remember a lot of it. I found myself really like feeling like I was watching it for the first time in a lot of spaces, but I was just a dumb little kid. I'm not supposed to remember these things, and I would not have appreciated it back then the way I do now. So glad, really, really glad to be watching it this time around.
Hell yeah!
All right, I'll get us started real quick, Denny. Did you know this was based on a French novel?
I did not.
An adaptation of a book.
Today,
very interesting. Today you learned. And I forgot to give a plot synopsis, so I'm going to continue with this fact and do that later. Well, I'll let you do it because it's your pick. In the novel and in the movie, they believe the planet they are on is a planet that orbits a star in the constellation Orion. In the movie, I can't remember which one it is called, but I'm bummed out because in the book, the star they are orbiting, or believe they're orbiting, is Betelgeuse.
Oh, shit!
And I'm only mad because we do not have an audio clip of Charlton Heston saying Betelgeuse.
God, that would have been awesome!
if we stuck to the source material, we could have had it. But, Denny, I'll let you synopsisize the plot. Sorry for going out of order on things.
All good. Charlton Heston and his crew on the Nostromo land in the ocean. Nostromo basically stole this. Alien basically stole this intro.
Wait a second.
They've been in hypersleep for like thousands of years. One of their crew members died. They start wandering around this new planet. They find a pack of mute, naked humans running around like animals, and they're shortly corralled by sentient gorillas. Or as
on
we
horseback.
Like to call them, monkeys.
Yes, we do.
Basically, Charlton Heston is shot in the throat and captured, and is hanging out with Dr. Zira as a science experiment. They're basically doing this, like, humans are people too campaign, but the theocracy government doesn't believe in it. They lobotomize and castrate his crew members. He eventually proves he can talk. There's, like, this Bertram Cates-ass evolution debate trial. And then they're like, fine! If you like humans so much, then you can go to the Forbidden Zone and prove that they're there, like one of you says they were. And they go and they prove that there's humans. This is, if this is not considered spoilers, like I absolutely knew the ending of this movie and it doesn't change how much I loved it in the slightest. Basically, it turns out there was a theocratic conspiracy to cover up that humans had ever existed. And as Charlton Heston and his lady friend are sent out into the Forbidden Zone at the end of the movie, they quickly find the Statue of Liberty, and it shows that they are on Earth after there has been a nuclear holocaust that extincted the human race. And apes grew up and evolved, and now they're doing what humans in 2025 were doing. So, you know, they're not that evolved, but man.
More on that now.
I mean, like, seriously, dude, this is what blew my mind. And this is my only note that I made. I just watched the movie because it was really engaging to me.
I took a lot, so we'll have places to go. Go ahead.
If you asked me, how do boomers write their sci-fi? I would not have said they send a Nietzsche surrogate into an evolution debate that is critical of Christianity. Holy shit, I was not... This is like when I watched The Apartment and it was like, your boss is not your friend, eat the rich. And I was like... From what fucking generation did this come? Like,
also, women are horny. They're like, what the fuck?
That was a scientific discovery made in the 70s, I believe.
No, The Apartment predicted it.
Yeah.
That's why they thought it was a fantasy.
Real art creates life situation.
Yeah. That's funny. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
If this movie came out today, like, it would be so fucking controversial. Like, if you tried to play this specific movie at, like, a school in the Bible Belt, you could get shit started, dude. Like,
It would get banned so fucking fast, which is funny because this film is in the National Film Registry in the Library of Congress, I think, because certain people haven't discovered it's there yet.
No, it's that I guarantee you, dude, it's that they don't really fucking know what it says. It's just like, it's the same as, like, you know, all these fucking old people that are pissed that they don't have social security anymore. That fucking word, social what? You like social fucking what? They don't understand the things they like. They just thought, like, it was cool when they saw the Statue of Liberty. That's it, dude. I promise.
Yeah. They just liked the costumes, which so did I.
They were so good they reused them for Howling 2 Sturbo Werewolf Bitch.
Figure it out. You're creative. Man, I feel like we've opened the pathway to at least 5 different conversations, and I'm trying to pick which one to go down. The first movie of the season in the Library of Congress, I assume the eligibility for Monkey Trouble hasn't opened up yet, so I guess that's why.
Yeah.
But as far as this movie being ahead of its time, I will say, theme-wise, I'm with you 100%, and modern audiences, I think, will watch it. Like, if you have no idea what the plot is, no idea what's going to happen, you can kind of clock what's coming pretty early. But I was talking to my dad about it, and, you know, he's an old-school Star Trek nerd, and he's very much like, if it's a sci-fi show or movie in that era, it doesn't matter how much like Earth it looks, if they tell you it's an alien planet, you're just supposed to believe it's an alien planet.
Right, sure.
we all just bought in, pretty much. So my dad seeing this in the theater at 11 years old isn't going to be like, I've seen better, I know what's gonna happen.
Right.
I think it worked a lot better at the time, but, you know, I had some vague memory of what was going to happen in the end, and I was like, well, of course, it's just so obvious. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's all I had to really say about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's something that has been, like, parodied and, like, been in so many things. You know, like, I remember, like, I think I'd seen, like, the Simpsons Planet of the Apes musical episode when I was in, like, fifth grade, and I hadn't even seen this movie, but I thought it was hilarious. And I had also not seen Amadeus, so I didn't get the Dr. Zaius parody, but I thought that they were just singing about a funny monkey, and I loved it. But I also think, like, you know, things like evolution got really politicized in the 80s and 90s, and that's like when we started existing, so we kind of always see it that way. But it didn't used to really be like a controversial topic, really. Like, the creature from the Black Lagoon is from the 50s. I think it's 52, might be 51, I don't remember. But it's like the creature, the character, is a missing link in evolution. That is its backstory, and the movie starts with like explaining the process of evolution. And it's like, this is not, it's not like a hot take. That's something that's been made a hot take, and we've got the movies to prove it.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to think about it in that historical context, because, yeah, I've only ever known it as like a constant and ongoing debate, and maybe it was like the only thing we were worried about as church-going individuals, I'll say, back in the 90s and early 2000s. Like, this is an affront to us, actually. This is actually meant to make us feel bad.
I was told to argue with my fucking science teachers when they told me about evolution.
Oh, you were expected to, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of my riot as a Texan. They've made several movies about how they arrest you for it, but we actually just berated our science teachers all the time. Poor guys.
Yeah. Without going to jail?
Yeah, it was awesome.
But my victim complex! Anyways, yeah, like, I knew this episode was going to be a little bit more revealing about, you know, I knew it was going to be a more political episode, because the themes of the movie kind of forced that conversation, and I knew it was going to be a little bit more revealing about the, you know, Danny and I's past upbringing, that kind of thing, so I just couldn't believe what I was watching, and just, like, feeling a certain sense of exhaustion that how much of this was being discussed is just, like, still going on, and it's just,
well,
you can pick any kind of theme you want, or argument, or like power dynamic, or whatever is going on in this movie, and just bring it back to today and just be like, oh fuck, it's actually a little worse now, huh?
Well, this is what's crazy, is I think that they would have viewed this, like, theocracy putting science on trial as a thing of the past when they made this movie. I think they would have viewed it as something, like, they're portraying this society that is less civilized than us and is essentially repeating our mistakes as humans, and that's why we're like, don't do that! Go in the forbidden zone! Yeah. Ask questions!
If only he could show them that he could talk, they'll believe him.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that this would have been considered, like, archaic to them. Like, obviously, like, America being Christian came to, like, it was Cold War shit. It was, like, the Ruskies are godless, and we're the opposite of that, and that's where, like, all the under God stuff happens and all that shit, you know? And then that gets manipulated into being, like, we're a particular kind of fundamentalist Christian nation, and, you know, Methodist, they don't really count because they have gay people and scientists, so that couldn't be, you know, that couldn't be of God. And I think we went backwards, man. I don't think this was, like, something to I think it was trying to caution us about, like, nuclear war, but I don't think, like,
yeah,
it just, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's a fucking exhausting time to be alive, and God damn, I love Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. It was just, like, I feel like I have a lot to say, but not really, like, an effective way to say it without repeating most of what you just said, so.
Yeah, I don't want to spend this episode doing that either. I kind of can't help myself. I'm trying not to, but, like, I like that we don't talk about current events on this show. I like that we talk about old movies, and I want to keep doing that.
Yeah. And that's why, like, we started this conversation by saying, holy crap, we love this movie. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it. It's just, like, the timelessness of it is what keeps it so good in our modern context, like, viewing standpoint, if that makes sense. So it's just, it's a testament to how good the movie is, that it's making us feel like a real emotional impact based on what's going on around us.
Yeah.
So it has to be mentioned, it has to be talked about at least some, so I'm not gonna like shy away from the conversation completely. But also, like, that's not normally how we talk about movies, I guess. Yeah. But like it's what makes it so timeless. Yeah. So it has to come up. And yeah.
Bro, speaking of timeless, how about those SFX? Not a shitty effect or costume in the house, man. Everything looked really, really good. The ape makeup, dude, the ape suits and builds, those were like, dude, I don't know that I've ever seen something pre-Jim Henson that looked that good. Have you?
I don't think so. And you're right. Like, you keep looking at, like, the apes talking, waiting for, like, oh, they're really, like, articulating all of the words. And that's kind of the most impressive part for me. It's just, like, the makeup here, like, around the nose and around the eyes and, like, the hair and everything, that can all be, like, plastered on and kind of set. But, like, the eyes move and, like, just fit and look so natural. And the mouth moves and it, like, you can tell that, like, you could almost, like, put it on mute and read their lips, almost.
Right,
like,
right.
It's such an impressive costume. And then the physical performances is needed to kind of sell the body movements and that kind of thing. It's all so, so impressive.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. Again, we use the word timeless. And what I've always said is that, like, if it tricked my eye in 1962, or when did this movie come out? Sometime in
68.
If it tricked your eye in 68, it'll trick your eye now. CGI doesn't age that well. So, you know, speaking of E.T., that's always the example I use. I'm like, I watch E.T., and, like, my eye believes that little fucker is running around. Like, it really looks like a real little dude running around to me. 'Cause they made a fucking movie, Greg. We used to make fucking movies.
We used to make movies!
Picture shows.
Moving pictures. Etc. Yeah, man. What did you think of the Heston performance? I found it kind of... It was a little funny. Like, the guy is... Taylor is the name of the character. Such a bummer in the beginning. They, like... crash land on the planet, and the whole time he's just talking with his pals, just like, you know, everyone that you ever knew, they're fucking dead. All their kids are dead. There is no sort of lineage that connects you to anyone that exists right now, so we are truly more alone than we'll ever be. I'm like, all right, cool, man. Like, should we go west, or like, what's the deal?
Dude, he's fucking Nietzsche, and I think that's what I really took away from his performance, was really more the writing than anything, just because I was not expecting the hero of this movie to be so nihilistic about shit, and... Mm-hmm.
But also, like, right.
No, he's 100% right, but, like, you know, this is from a very, very insincere era of sci-fi, you know, like, it's you usually have to get to sincerity before you get to cynicism, and they just jumped right past sincerity.
Oh, man. We're just bummed out that our blonde lady died in space. Seriously, we were supposed to procreate with her.
That was a great effect, by the way. Her corpse,
dead body.
That looked really good.
Oh,
dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. There's some kind of ghastly feeling about it. Mm-hmm, it's just unsettling for sure.
Man, I think it was really cool the talking doll they found in the cave still worked after 2 millennia.
This is a good Duracell ad, if anything.
Dude. Oh my god. I have a lot of old toys, and let me tell you, the talking feature is the first thing to go, people.
There is someone on TikTok every year will post a video of, they have an ornament of Elsa from Frozen singing Let It Go, and they like play it again. Like, they upload a video every year to see how, like, how degraded the voice box has gotten. It's gotten insanely funny. It's really great.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that doll. Yeah, I well, maybe not yet, actually. I thought it was kind of funny that, like, the doll was what proved humans existed.
Yeah.
Kind of in all their collective minds. They're just like, not all the other stuff, not the fact that, you know, Taylor has these memories and whatever else, but we do figure all that out, and he still can't put the pieces together. Like, wait, this is Earth. Oh, shit. I guess someone on this distant planet also made talking dolls. It's just a thing humans do, no matter what planet they're on.
Sure.
Oh, man.
Well, so we kind of have this kind of philosophically split ending. I think the irony is that the theocracy of the apes is trying to keep us out of the Forbidden Zone, or not us, keep their people out of the Forbidden Zone. Basically because they want to control their perceptions of reality and prevent them from making the same mistakes the humans made. And then we see them, the literal, in the literary sense, irony of it all is that they are, by doing that, repeating our mistakes. What say you? You send Charlton Heston off into the brave new world. Do you want to know the truth, or do you want to live in a structured society?
I guess I have to watch the sequel and find out.
Shit. There's like 80 sequels to this movie.
I'll just watch the James Franco one and give you an opinion then.
Perfect.
Perfect. Oh, but I don't know. I think, you know, there is kind of a nice veneer on the ape society of just like the hierarchy of humans versus apes. You know, these are basically animals. We kind of switched.
Yeah.
And, lost my train of thought. Dang it.
I got you.
Baby noises in the other room. I'm sorry.
Oh, dude. What a father of the year, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my goodness.
Getting distracted about monkey talk because a baby made noise. Sweet little Bambino. It's a fine hierarchy, I guess. It's just this notion of we have to hide the history of what's really going on. When there's not a talking human, it seems fine because there's no sort of desire to explore that. When we've got the theocracy, it's just kind of like, here's how it is. This sort of way of life allows us to live peacefully. The problem for me comes when it's just like challenged even a little bit. It's just like, it shows how fear-based that theocracy's power really is. It's just, we're controlling everything, just like, the only motivation is fear.
Right.
Basically, like you were saying, it's not, we're just trying to not repeat our mistakes, and in doing so, are repeating our mistakes. And that only really gets exposed when there's even a slight challenge to the norm or the status quo. But the thing is, that's gonna happen. That's bound to happen.
Yeah.
There's gonna be a challenge to the theology or whatever, like, the existing power is and how it got there. That's going to be challenged at some point, and it just doesn't have any sort of legs to stand on. You don't realize until that comes up, oh, we're leading people, or apes, whatever, via fear, and oh shit, I guess we are evil. But there's, at that point, there's just not going to be any sort of self-awareness to say, maybe this is slightly wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's like, it's a neoconservative philosophy that people like Dinesh D'Souza and fucking Ted Cruz subscribe to. And it's this idea that the commoners, they really, you know, they can't handle the truth about, like, the way the world works and all that shit, and that it is, like, the leaders of society's job to maintain the myths of the culture that help it make meaning and all that shit. And it's just this super condescending, like, the peasants need to have stories told to them, and I'm like, dude, go fuck yourself, you fucking damn dirty apes. Like, every last one of you.
That's not the line.
If you want to learn, go fuck yourself, apes. God, that would have been so fuck. Can we get an edit of that? I'm tired of all these motherfucking apes with their motherfucking hands on me. What was I saying?
the peasants need stories told to them.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, nah, send them outward into the fucking abyss and let them figure it out for themselves. We're all tough enough to face reality. Fuck off.
That's exactly right. Like, you tell yourself that the motivation is the safety of the people and whatever else.
But it's not.
And just like, we're just trying to keep everyone safe. And maybe part of you believes that. But as soon as it gets challenged, the more the challenge of that, the more you get confronted with that, the more you have to manipulate and become, I'll just say, like, fascist or dictator level. Yeah. Just, no, I control you.
Yeah.
It's just, it reveals what you were all along, basically.
Man, it's crazy. The people who keep telling me they need to keep me safe are the only people who get to decide what safe means. It's crazy how that works.
They are keeping me safe by defining what it means for me to be safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this for sentience debate questions. Do you think that there are currently species of animals that are self-aware?
Yeah, I think my dog knows he's a little stinker.
Obviously, Anton. But
obviously. We're
talking about species.
Self-aware? Like, as opposed to, like, so just not acting on instinct in any way whatsoever, or just, like,
no, I'm just saying they know that they exist. Like, I can tell you for sure, like, chickens don't know that they exist. Okay. Chickens, absolutely not.
Hmm. I don't know. I guess I haven't really thought about it. Maybe, like, you know, we have what we would call, like, smarter animals, like elephants, dolphins, that kind of thing. There could be, but maybe just, like, I don't know. I don't want to get into a dolphin's brain, find out for myself, but maybe just kind of an acceptance of, here's what I am, and I like what I am.
Yeah.
Or, like, I do these things because I must. I don't know. I'm not a fucking animal doctor. Scientist of any kind. Zoologist? Zookeeper? Well, Kevin James?
Oh my god. Mall
Cop? We bought a zoo.
Paul Blart bought a kazoo?
I'm not Paul Blart, and we did not buy a zoo.
We bought a Segway to fall off of because it's hilarious.
Gets me every time.
The fat man fell down. Have some money. Anyway.
My favorite joke.
Man.
What are we talking about?
Self-aware
animals.
Do you
believe that? Do you believe?
I have. Well, these are my thoughts, right? Dogs and cats, they have a concept of mine. Like, this belongs to me. Nobody else take it, right? So if there is a mine, it implies
no
a
take,
me,
only throw.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. You would have to have a concept of me to be the owner of something. And so to me, I'm like, yeah, on some level, I think dogs and cats and, you know, like, probably mammals with the more developed your prefrontal cortex is, the more capable of self-reflection you are. And I always think about, like, anthropologically, when scientists will start to believe a society of humans is self-aware is when they bury their dead, especially when they bury them with, like, artifacts. It's like, okay, if they knew what death was, they probably weren't, like, animal people running around, you know? Like, So I look at that and I'm like, elephants have funerals. Elephants seem to know what death is, right? Like, how far away are we from seeing one of them make a sundial? I don't know. I definitely think that the brain structure of a really big prefrontal cortex, you just see that in greater degrees in mammals. And I think that mammals seem to be moving in that direction as a function of, like, geological time, which is, you know, like, that's like humans aren't even on it, so we don't even count in that equation, essentially.
Yeah, you think, like, the domestication of dogs specifically, like, the concept of mine probably just stems from this is my food. I need to eat this food mm-hmm. to survive. So I'm going to fight off anyone that would take this food from me because I need it to survive. And now it is a little 14-pound fluffy little Shih Tzu right. saying this rubber ball that does nothing but get thrown is mine, actually.
And I know everybody wants it, but it's mine.
I know the only way that it gets thrown, which is my favorite thing, is if I give it to him, but I'm not going to give it to him because it's mine. No take, only throw.
Yeah. That's got to be like, if you're capable of an interaction that complex, you know, like, I'm at a point, like, I stopped eating beef completely a while ago, partially for my blood pressure, but also because I saw a video about how cows are basically dogs and big puppies, and I really yeah. don't eat any red meat anymore. I pretty much only just eat chicken. And I'm just at a point where I'm like, I don't want to eat a creature I could have a relationship with. And mm-hmm. like, I just feel weird about eating something that I could. And believe me, I had pet chickens and it made me more okay with chicken slaughterhouses. Like, there is nothing behind those fucking eyes. Trust me.
Yeah. You ever met a chicken?
Dude, motherfucker. Like,
there's no relationship to be had.
My roommate in college comes home with a puppy carrier unannounced and says, "Hey, Denny, come meet your three new best friends." And I go, "Puppies?" Imagine my dismay when chickens were inside the fucking puppy carrier.
It's three puppies. That's an adventure. Three chickens is chores.
This
is a burden.
We made a coop for them out of a shopping cart we stole from HEB. The next day, they actually found a, like, haul it and have it actual good chicken coop. I was actually surprised how quickly that problem worked itself out. It was actually legit.
Nice.
It was not an entire semester. I hated them. I fucking hated those birds. We named them Britt, Jermaine, and Murray after Flight of the Conchords, and
Flightless Conchords.
Chickens are very racist. If you have two chickens that look the same and one chicken that looks different, they will try to kill the one that looks different, and that was constantly happening in our house. Two red hens really ganging up on a speckled hen. They were always getting out. The biggest thing that really pissed me off about the whole fucking situation was that they weren't laying eggs because our backyard just didn't get enough sunlight. They have to get sunlight to lay eggs, and our house just cast a shadow over the whole backyard. So we had all chicken, no egg in our life. I fucking hated those birds. Because you shouldn't eat an animal. Well, I don't want to say you shouldn't. I don't feel as comfortable eating an animal I can have a relationship with.
All that being said,
would you eat a monkey?
Yes. Oh, no
fucking.
Because if I learned anything from last week's episode on Monkey Shines, I could have a pretty solid relationship with a monkey.
Vanessa's
and in the case of this movie, I could have a very strong and actually beneficial relationship with these monkeys.
I mean, like, I could have a potential romantic or sexual relationship with some of them. Like, some of them were hot, is all I'm saying.
I'm not saying the monkeys weren't hot. Just to be clear.
Dude, what a different movie this would be if instead of, I don't even remember his lady friend's name, but what if he decided to...
Nova.
Oh, Nova. That's a great name.
Yeah.
What if he rode off with Dr. Zira instead? That would be a very different movie. I would have felt happy for them. They would be great together.
I think she would have liked it. Oh, man. I was like, show you all kinds of... You remember how much your mind got blown by that paper airplane. Just wait.
Wait till you see a 747, baby. Ow!
Oh, shit. You thought these hands could just write. Wow. His mouth ain't just for talking. All right, anyways, I did have a funny... regarding Nova, I thought it was kind of funny that she's just getting dragged around, and the relationship between Taylor and Nova feels really like, guys, I think I got a chance with this mute, dumb, animal brain level woman. I think I'm gonna see where it goes.
Time to populate the world, baby.
Yeah, my blonde, you know, died on the starship. I got a mute brunette here that doesn't know how to speak or,
you know what was,
communicate. I think I got a shot with her.
I mean, I think he's the only one that's got a shot with her. They're locked in the same cage. So proximity really, it's really a relationship of convenience, you gotta admit, right?
Yeah, talk about power dynamics, though.
Bro, how fucked up was it, speaking of power dynamics, that they just fucking one flew over the cuckoo's nested his crew members? Like, that was like a gut punch for me.
Yeah, you kind of, like, you go through that segment kind of assuming that they had died.
Yeah.
And then used, like, the, I guess, lobotomize the one guy. You know for sure the one guy died, and then the other one, you assume died, but then you see him just, like, fully lobotomized, like, just, and then his outburst in that is just felt so well. It's just a totally understandable reaction of just, like, I could fucking show you what we're capable of, but you fucking broke his head. So now he's just reset to be these things.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I did feel that impact pretty heavily. Yeah, I was very emotionally invested in this movie and the characters.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Like I said, I took no notes. Like, I was just like, nah, I want to have undivided attention on this shit. It was a classic, dude. It was just so holistically engaging. Like, there was never a moment where I, like, picked up my phone or anything. I was just along for the ride. A very, very well done movie.
Yeah, and, like, with the ending, you know, we both kind of said, like, we knew what was coming with the end. Your emotional investment, did you still feel like the impact of that ending? I still felt like the head, this sense of hollowness of just, like, there is nothing more to discover. Yeah. All that's left is the past. There is nothing. Oh, man, like, just the emptiness and, like, the broken heart. It's heartbreaking, and it's just like, I knew it was coming, but I still felt the impact of it. It was so well done.
Yeah, well, and like, having known the ending, context was huge. In my head, for some reason, I had it where, like, he sees the Statue of Liberty, and then that's where he shouts, "You damn dirty apes." So that's what I was... I mean, he said it already in the middle of the movie, so I figured it probably doesn't happen again.
Callback? Oh.
But, like, that was the tone I was expecting was, why? You know, like, cursing the sky. And then when it was just, like, silence, and we're, like, I could very easily imagine, because they start shooting the Liberty hat spokes, I guess you call them. They shoot them from behind, so it's not the angle we normally see them from. And so it's, like... That's kind of familiar. Like, I could kind of see how they were revealing it to people gradually who didn't, you know, like, and
it feels man-made, but you're not sure what it is, and then you know what this is.
Right. And I still felt like you're saying, because of the hollowness of it all, I still felt like I got a really big grand finale to it all.
And just the damn you, like, you know, you were thinking he was saying, "You damn dirty apes," like blaming the apes for the way things are, but he's cursing basically the human race as he knew them in his time.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's, he's got no one to grab by the shoulders and shake and say no.
Yeah.
And we'll get into favorite lines later, but you can tell this is always kind of part of what he was kind of about. So we'll get to that in a little bit though. So what else you got? Any other, you didn't take any notes. Any other things you want to kind of hit on?
No, that's an organic segue into gimmicks for me, if you're good to go with it.
Yeah, I think I am. No other notes. We kind of took care of everything. I was also taking very few notes, but I made a lot, like, the next day, like, after the fact. Like, I did like that, too. I liked that, too. I will say I loved the... The long zooms, you know, we'll just get, like, kind of a fully realized scene with like three people in it and a plant, and it just like zooms in really tightly to like someone's face or the plant. Like some of the camera work was absolutely sending me, and I thought it was very fun.
Yeah, dude.
Especially in the beginning, yeah. That just remained interesting. All right. Gimmick of the week. It continues, folks. It is our moment of monkey business. Mm-hmm. Denny, what you got for me for the moment of monkey business?
Clear winner. So awesome that they did this. So strange, but also just perfect. In the trial that they're having, when the tribunal of ape judges does, yep, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, I was just like God, that's some monkey fucking business if I've ever seen it in my life. That was honestly one of the only moments in the movie of like comic relief and them being cut ups, and you know, like it was really fun.
Yeah.
So that was my pick. What about you?
Oh, like that's a little bonus for us, the audience. I like it. I think that's a perfect pick. I gotta be honest, I think like when you think of monkey business, like what better option is there? But I went with something that I mentioned semi-recently, the paper airplane, and just like you're starting to realize like, oh, these apes are like just so advanced. They're like we have these scientists, they're super engaged with science, they've got like, there really is like an advanced knowledge set, and they're like, well, our like scripture thing says flight's impossible, so I don't know what you're talking about with a spaceship. And then he just makes a paper airplane and throws it, and they're like, holy shit,
no one's ever thrown something before, we should throw our no,
suppress those urges. Yeah, like the paper airplane just kind of floats, and they're like, what the fuck, how did you do that?
Bro, it would be so funny if, like, to curb their natural instinct to throw shit, that, like, you are not allowed to throw things in this society, so they'd, like, literally never seen something like a projectile in the air before.
Yeah, bullets are magic. They have guns. Yeah. It's the only thing you're allowed to throw is nets at humans, I guess. What is your favorite line from the film Planet of the Apes?
I mean, choosing to ignore the obvious, keep your hands off me, you damn dirty apes. Like, that's just, like, objectively the best line in the movie. I'm gonna choose to let that speak for itself.
Not only a great line, but also, like, fantastic timing.
Oh.
The way he belts it. That's the first time he talks, right?
Yeah, since his throat got shot, yeah. That's when he gets his speech back. And as someone who was expecting it at the end of the movie, I was like, oh, damn, that was good.
I love when, like, a well-known, famous line happens in a movie, and you're still just like, whoa, damn!
Yeah, it like...
It still hits just as hard as if you'd never known it before.
Yeah, it reminded me of, like, Psycho and things being out of... I don't want to spoil Psycho, never mind. But, yeah, man, what about your favorite line? I'm giving my favorite line. I'm sorry. Other than the obvious, I went with Still on the Ship, I Feel Lonely. That one just hit, and it really set the tone of hollowness for the movie.
Interesting. Mine's also from the ship, but I had a couple runners up. I don't know if this was the Amazon rental or the movie itself, but a piece of text warning audiences. It simply said, contains tobacco depictions. Loved that.
Greg! I wrote that down on mine too, and I was like, yes! It's probably not that funny. I don't know. No, that's the only other thing I wrote down for favorite line.
Oh shit! Bunch of people leaving the theater. I can't be exposed to such things.
Listen, evolution.
No,
is
no.
Fine.
Everyone in the theater. Everyone in the theater is smoking. They're like, so. Oh, that's great. My runner-up line, though, is, it's a madhouse! A madhouse! Heston in the cage, of course. Mm-hmm. And but my favorite line is also in the starship. We're recording one final captain's log before we go into the deep, long sleep. Heston's kind of the last one awake. He's about to put himself to sleep, and he kind of muses to himself, just kind of reflecting on the purpose of the journey itself. Tell me, though, does man, that marvel of the universe, that glorious paradox who has sent me to the stars, still make war against his brother, keep his neighbor's children starving? And the answer is yes, we're going out of our way to keep our neighbor's children starving, so.
Guys, he is, like, paraphrasing Marx with that line. Like, Karl Marx writes, like, he writes about, like, are you people aware of the conditions you allow your brothers to be subjected to? Like, this is a fucking Marxist movie, guys. I'm not fucking joking. It's punk rock as shit.
Well, maybe those six-year-olds in elementary school should be pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and feeding themselves.
Yeah, it's not up bitches.
To, it's not up to schools. We gotta spend that money on deporting innocent people. Anyways, all right, hey! Folks, that's the
people are gonna be like, movies for when? It was weird. They
went fucking woke, dude!
No, it's gonna be a science experiment of, like, I'm aware of one time there was a, like, really reliable test invalidated because someone didn't take it in one sitting, and 9/11 happened between the two sittings, and so they're, like, their results were drastically different on the, because it was, like, a personality inventory, and it put them in a dark place. Mm-hmm. People are going to be like, it's crazy. Movies for when, they were, like, so positive in January, then they went away until, like, April, and all they wanted to talk about was how much they fucking hate the world. Did anything happen in that time period?
I could think of one or three things.
Today.
But they still took the time. They still took no shit. They still took the time to talk about monkeys.
God,
so.
I feel like...
Some things never change.
I seriously keep hearing, when I post dumb bullshit on our Instagram account, fully aware of, like, the state of the world, I hear Ki Hoi Kwan and Everything Everywhere all at once saying, this is how I fight. That's what we're here for, guys. I hope this can be a break from it all. We don't mean to deny the nature of the world like the ape tribunal we've seen so critiqued in this movie. We just mean to come up for air and take a breath every once in a while. It's a lot out there. Listen to fun bullshit podcasts, watch fun bullshit movies. You owe it to yourself. Life is hard.
Yeah. And when the movies are fun bullshit, we will lean into that so fucking hard.
You better believe it.
The issue this week was this movie was about all the dumb bullshit we face today, so we had to lean into that.
Man.
So
it's just like the tweet always comes back to me where it's like science keeps being like, we've created the Tesseract Collider from the famous sci-fi yeah. novel. Don't create the Tesseract Collider. I'm like, man. Oh, Charlton Heston.
The Torment Nexus.
So disappointed in the generation that all saw this movie in theaters. You'd be so disappointed in how little they learned yeah. from it, buddy.
Modern company. We've created the Torment Nexus from the book titled Don't Create the Torment
That's
Nexus.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Fuck. Oh, shit. All right. Megan 2 in theaters this summer.
Jesus, is it?
Yeah, talking of AI and shit, I guess. Anything else we can hit on, or do we need to do, like, a fucking catchphrase and get out of here before I get...
Oh, dude, bummed. I watched Multiplicity, and it sucked. I skipped it in the We're Watching because I was getting too negative, but if we want to just vent our feelings, my man Michael Keaton, you were trying to find who you were in your career before you played Batman, but you did not find it, my friend. You seemed like a poor man's Robin Williams. It was not charming. Multiplicity. Dude, check this out, dude.
Didn't get there with Mr. Mom? Okay, yeah, hit me.
Multiplicity seriously has, like, face-off escalations of, like, problem-solving. Like, it seriously
Go
is,
on.
Like, Michael Keaton is married to Andy McDowell, and their marriage is having just some real fucking normal marriage issues. Like, he works a lot. She kind of wanted to go back to work. It's not really working out the way they thought it would. They're communicating poorly about it. They're both resistant to change. Just, like, crazy fucking normal, like, normal marriage shit. And then they're just like, what if you, like, cloned yourself so you could play golf all day and do all the boring bullshit at home? He does that about 5 times, learning absolutely nothing from the escalating series of consequences. And he's just like,
man, oh man.
The whole movie, he's like trying to riff improv, but it's like not funny. It like made me sad. I was like, come on, Beetlejuice, do something. You know? Like, anyway, I have a lot of negative energy to get out if you want to hear more.
Yeah, I was going to say, clearly this person was... Oh, it predates it, yeah. Calvin and Hobbes strip, scientific progress goes boink. Didn't read that. Where Calvin clones himself to go to school and do all this other stuff, yeah. Cautionary tale about cloning yourself.
Yeah, which brings me back to Mickey 17. What a great movie. Oh. I'm trying to end on a high note here, guys. What a great movie Mickey 17 was. Everyone should watch it, not just because it's like badass and cool, but because it'll make you feel happy thoughts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think my what we've been watching next week is going to be very positive. I spent a lot of time in the 90s, I'll say.
Greg.
It was just like cool shit after cool shit.
Man, I might just have to start over and just be like, check my Letterboxd if you want to know about Muppets Take Manhattan.
Oh, damn. All right, well, the Muppets can take Manhattan, but I need you to take this catchphrase, Hatton, please. I'm done. Let's get out of here. Hit me.
For Greg the not-so-secret Stash Johnson... I'm Denny. Let's hope the meds work, Taylor. And this has been Movies for When! We already told you when. But you know what we didn't tell you? What's my cage again?
I'm a policeman. See my badge?
Stay.